Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Ask the experts about free fitting on all our kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Brian, thank you very much. Still to come in this hour, millions of people around the world saw graphic footage of Charlie Kirk's assassination last week. But what is the impact, if any, of watching violent content online? We'll find out. And our own Adam Maguire has written a book. It's called The Bailout Babies, about the young adults still dealing with the aftermath of Ireland's economic crash. And Adam will be with us a little bit later on too. Now though, the Charlie Kirk murder suspect, Tyler Robinson, has appeared in court for the first time in the United States. Robinson, who is 22, appeared remotely at the court in Utah. He faces seven charges, and the Utah County Attorney Jeff Gray laid out the prosecution's plans. Simon Marks is chief correspondent of Feature Story News, and Simon joins me now on the line. Simon, thank you for being with us. So the prosecutors unveiled those seven charges that Tyler Robinson is going to face. There was a lot of detail, though, presented in court about the investigation. Will you take us through some of what was said?
Yes, indeed, Claire. Good morning. There was a lot of detail that we had not previously heard, as the Utah County Attorney Jeff Gray revealed that once his press conference was over, he was going to file paperwork to pursue this as a capital case, arguing that the aggravated murder that the state claims was committed by Tyler Robinson at the assassination of Charlie Kirk warrants the ultimate penalty, in part because there were so many young people in the crowd that could have been caught up in crossfire or in the gunman's shooting, even though in the actual event, of course, it was only one bullet that was fired that killed Mr. Kirk. We still are unclear entirely about Tyler Robinson's possible motive for this assault, although some detail was provided as the result of a series of text messages between Mr. Robinson and his partner, a man who is transitioning to be a woman. Initially, Mr. Robinson sent his partner a text message saying that they needed to look underneath the laptop keyboard in the apartment that they shared. And there was a note saying that Mr. Robinson had concluded he had the opportunity to attack Charlie Kirk at Utah Valley University, and he was going to take it. At which point the partner responds, "You weren't the one who did it, right?" And Mr. Robinson responds on text, I am, I'm sorry. And when Mr. Robinson's partner sought to understand why he might have taken this action against Charlie Kirk, Mr. Robinson allegedly writes, "I had enough of his hatred. Some hate can't be negotiated out." Now, what you do not learn through this text exchange is precisely what aspects of Mr. Kirk's messaging and ideology, and as Tyler Robinson put it there, hatred, led to this decision by Mr. Robinson to try and kill Charlie Kirk. So there is still a lack of clarity as to whether this was indeed, as President Trump has indicated, and as some Utah officials have suggested, a left-on-right attack. There are still lingering suspicions among many on social media that he may have been motivated from the right and irritated by some of the shifting positions that Charlie Kirk had held in the final months of his life. But certainly, this appears to provide evidence that the state is using to say that Mr. Robinson confessed to the crime, confessed to killing Mr. Kirk in that text exchange with his partner.
Yeah, I mean, they are taking it as an admission of guilt that may be disputed by Tyler's defence. But also he talks in those messages that were presented in court about retrieving his rifle and talking about where he had left it and that it was wrapped up and so on. There is a lot of information in that exchange, isn't there?
Yes, very much so. I mean, he even suggests that he had hoped to get away with the crime and hoped to live until an old age, knowing that this was his secret and they would together keep this secret. He indicates irritation with himself for having left the rifle, which he suggests was a gift to him from his family, a fairly unique rifle previously owned by his grandfather. He expresses grave concern about how the family is going to react to the fact that the rifle was missing, and he has a plan to go back and retrieve it. He was just waiting for one squad car that was parked outside wherever he was sending these text messages from to move on so that he could then return, we think, to the woods where that rifle was discarded as he fled the scene of the attack. And then further in the text exchange, it becomes apparent that he is also very fueled by concern about how his father is going to react to all of this as word reaches him that, you know, pictures of the suspect have been distributed by the authorities. But he does take comfort in the fact that the authorities at that point had not said that they had recovered the rifle. And so he certainly still seemed to be thinking at that stage of returning to the woods and trying to retrieve it, something, of course, that ultimately he was never able to do.
And Simon, as I mentioned there, he wasn't in court in person. He was there on a link, wasn't he? And there was a lot of speculation around what he was wearing. Some people thought it was a bulletproof vest. It wasn't. What was it?
Well, the New York Times is describing it as a suicide prevention smock, which apparently is standard issue in Utah. Two people that are accused of crimes of extreme violence, as of course this is, aggravated murder in this case. He sat alone in that room in the county jail on camera, wearing that green suicide prevention smock, and only spoke when he was asked to confirm his identity. He nodded a couple of times and was told by the judge in the case that the case is now being adjourned until September the 29th, when the first hearing will occur. He is said not to be cooperating with authorities. The state is providing him with a lawyer because the judge in the case has concluded that Mr. Robinson is indigent, cannot afford his own legal representation. The court also approved a request from Charlie Kirk's widow, Erica, that there should be absolutely no effort at communication between Mr. Robinson and her, and also that she is going to be recognised as the person in that courtroom who will determine, who will have victims' rights. I mean, who will have the opportunity, presumably at some point during this, what is going to be a lengthy proceeding, to confront Mr. Robinson in the courtroom in the event that this ever gets to a sentencing hearing.
OK, and there will be another hearing in about 2 weeks, just under 2 weeks' time. Is that right?
Yeah, a brief hearing, we think, another brief hearing, although, of course, that will depend on the pace that the investigation takes over the next couple of weeks. We still do not know the identity of Mr. Robinson's partner, whether efforts to continue masking that from the public succeed in this polarised world of 24/7 social media action, I suspect, is highly dubious. And there are still, of course, questions about Mr. Robinson's family after we learnt yesterday that his mother was the first person to see those pictures of him and then alert his father to the fact that she thought their son was the man pictured in those CCTV images that were distributed after the killing. And that, of course, led the family to persuade Mr. Robinson ultimately to turn himself into the authorities.
And just a word, Simon, about the fallout from all of this, because, you know, everybody, I think, had huge fears that this was going to be polarising. It absolutely has been, of course. We have seen that in the intervening days. But in terms of protests, people on the streets, violence, have we seen that in the United States anywhere? What's your own assessment of what has happened since?
Well, I think this is a crime that has completely changed America and changed its trajectory. And that's not just to do with the actions of the alleged gunman. It's also to do with the actions of the President of the United States, who has done nothing to try and bring the country together in the week since Mr. Kirk's assassination, but has actually continued to argue that radical left Democrats are funding and supporting acts of terrorism, political violence that he portrays entirely through a binary prism of left on right. We have not seen protests in the streets. We've not seen violence on the streets. We've not seen uprisings. We've certainly seen individual confrontations between supporters and detractors of Charlie Kirk, supporters of Charlie Kirk and admirers of him, particularly furious about some people on social media that they argue have celebrated Charlie Kirk's assassination. And many of them have paid with their jobs because the government is encouraging employers to fire anyone who engages in what the Attorney General, Pam Bondi, described yesterday as saying horrible things about Mr. Kirk. So the atmosphere here is febrile, and former President Barack Obama spoke yesterday about the situation in the country being a political crisis and rounded on President Trump for failing to do anything to bring the country together. He says that at this moment, when tensions are high, part of the job of the president is to pull people together. In reality, what Donald Trump and his top officials are now threatening is to root out foundations, supporters of left-wing groups in the United States. They're talking about moving to a zero-tolerance policy, even potentially exile, according to Stephen Miller, the president's deputy White House chief of staff, for people who have, as Pam Bondi put it, said horrible things about Charlie Kirk.
Extraordinary. Simon, thank you so much for bringing us the latest on that story from the United States. Simon Marks, their chief correspondent with Feature Story News.